We shall turn now to the portion of God's Word read, the book of Daniel, chapter 2. We may read from verse 28. Daniel 2, verse 28, words of Daniel. Perhaps we might read from verse 27. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, show unto the king? But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thine head upon thy bed are these," and so on. We have given some consideration to Daniel as one of the favorites among the godly in the Old Testament. He is referred to as Daniel the Beloved. And there is indeed something that is very lovely about the character and about the life of Daniel. We noted last week that Daniel is among the mentioned, or at least referred to without any name, one who overcame and shut the mouths of lions. He's among the great cloud of witnesses to the strength and the power of faith. Now, when Paul writes to the Romans and tells him in Romans 15 that the things that were written aforetime, they were written for our learning and so on. Now that includes what is written of the saints and the godly servants of God, and therefore what is written regarding Daniel ought to be instructive, and we ought to learn from it. And considering further Daniel then, we may consider what is stated regarding, or what comes out in the statements that he makes, his knowledge of God. Daniel was able to write near the end of this book of dark days that would come upon the church in the future. But he was able to write this by inspiration, chapter 11, verse 32, "And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits." However dark it might be, and however corrupt and wicked society might be, the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And Daniel was the man that he was and accomplished what he did because of his personal knowledge of God. He was able to state here, as we read in this verse 28 of chapter 2, "But there is a God in heaven." There is a God in heaven. Now, as far as Nebuchadnezzar the king was concerned, there was a multitude of gods throughout Babylon. He even names Daniel after his own particular god, Belteshazzar, we're told in the chapter that Daniel was given this name after the god who was worshipped by Nebuchadnezzar. Belteshazzar means the keeper of Bel's treasures. And Daniel was given this name and was considered to be more Babylonian and more aligned with the gods of Babylon than the God of his fathers. But you can see from what Daniel has to say, how he approached God, how he prayed to God. Verse 23 of chapter 2, I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers. However much the king might endeavor to change Daniel and change his outlook and his attitudes to Babylon or to his former religious convictions, Daniel remained steadfastly adhering to the God of his fathers. Whenever Daniel came into Babylon, he came as a captive, and yet you see how God, because he knew God, because he had faith in God, because he trusted God, you see how God honored him and blessed him. And it is amazing to see in this one chapter, chapter 2, what is stated regarding him in chapter 2, verse 25. Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah. I have found a man of the captives, the conquered, those who have been taken away from their land and are now subjects in a foreign land to the great king of Babylon. I have found a captive. And yet, when we come to the end of this chapter 2, we read in verse 48, then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. What an amazing way God led Daniel, how he honored him. This is the promise of God that he will honor them that honor him. And we noted last week how that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He would rather honor God. And because he did honor God, God honored him. And there he was, coming in among the captives into Babylon, and in a short time, God has elevated him from being a mere captive to being chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. And then you see later on that he is elevated in the under the reign of Darius the Mede. You go to chapter 6 of Daniel, it pleased, verse 1, Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes. That's a reasonable number. And undoubtedly, the purpose for which these princes, these rulers were selected and put into office was because they would have been the cream, as it were, of Babylonian society. And they would have exhibited great knowledge and great wisdom and would have been considered men qualified to keep stability and maintain stability in this great empire. We're told that Darius set 120 princes which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these, three presidents. So you take 120 and then you've got the 123 individuals who would have been selected for their great qualities to rule, to govern, and to maintain peace in the provinces. And what are we told? Over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first. So Daniel is elevated right up to this position where he is actually next to the king himself, King Darius. And the reason is that the princes might give accounts unto them and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Now there's a problem. This Daniel was preferred above the princes or the presidents and princes. There was something about Daniel that had to be acknowledged. There was an excellent spirit in him that the king acknowledged, and he was set over the whole realm. God honored Daniel even in that great heathen idolatrous empire, because he honored God. God was with him. God upheld him. God sustained him. Even when governments had changed, wars took place, and yet Daniel, somehow God kept him from one king to the next, from one kingdom to the next. And Daniel was preferred. But then what happens? Verse 4. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. Because he was preferred above all the others, they became covetous. They became envious. They didn't like it. This captive, this stranger who has come as a captive into the land, it seemed outrageous that he should be so preferred that he is sitting, as it were, next to the king. Going back to Nebuchadnezzar, we find verse 49 of chapter 2. Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. It was as though he became counselor to the king. The king relied upon him. The king put confidence in him. He could see that he was a wise man, that he was a knowledgeable man, that he was discreet, that he was reliable, and he sat in the gate of the king. Now, that is really remarkable when you think of where he has come from and how in a short time God has elevated him, who is but a youth. As far as men were concerned, he was one of the children, the captive children that was brought into Babylon, as I said last week. Most of the scholars imagine that he was around 17 years of age. In the chapter 4, we read that Daniel, the last verse 8 of Daniel 4, but at the last Daniel came in before me. This is the testimony of Nebuchadnezzar regarding Daniel. But at last came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream. Now, what is Nebuchadnezzar actually saying? He says, there is something peculiar. There is something about Daniel that sets him apart from ordinary men. In him is the spirit of the holy gods. Now, he didn't just say, in him is the spirit of the gods, recognizing that he's got some kind of, as it were, supernatural power to interpret dreams and so on. But he recognized there was something of the spirit of holiness in Daniel. His life, his conversation, his behavior was stamped with holiness. You see, Nebuchadnezzar didn't know Daniel's God. He was ignorant of the God of Daniel, but he trusted in his own gods. And he was certain that the spirit and the gods that he relied upon must be dwelling in Daniel, because he did what ordinary men, even the soothsayers and the Chaldeans and so on, they simply couldn't do. And Daniel was elevated even in the mind before he's elevated in position and office. The very fact that the king Nebuchadnezzar gave Daniel the name that he did, it was as though Daniel was, as it were, to protect the God, the favorite God of Nebuchadnezzar, Bel, keeper of Bel's treasures. Daniel was, as it were, to be maintaining somehow the worship of Nebuchadnezzar's God. But it is interesting that when the messenger from heaven comes to Daniel, as we've already noted it, he didn't come to Daniel and say, O Belteshazzar. But Daniel's name remained Daniel in heaven, whatever happened in Babylon. He said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved. Daniel's name and Daniel's status remained firm in heaven, even though he was in the midst of all the temptations and all the allurements of Babylon. Now, Daniel's knowledge of God, as we've already referred to it, is very interesting. What an amazing thing, in the midst of all the idols and all the false gods and all the awful blasphemous religion in Babylon, there was a man who knew the God of heaven. There is a God in heaven. He is not upon earth as such. He rules in heaven. He doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and amongst the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? And here's Daniel saying to Nebuchadnezzar, there's a God that you don't know, Nebuchadnezzar. There is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. There is a God in heaven, and that's the God that I'm trusting in and the God that I'm depending upon. And that God reveals secrets, because with him there are no secrets. There is nothing that can be hidden from him. And even though Nebuchadnezzar could not remember the dream that he dreamed, Daniel knew God has it still in his memory, as it were. God hasn't forgotten it. it is fresh, as it were, in his memory. And therefore, if we are to know what the secret is, it is to God we have to go. And that's exactly what they did. And in verse 19 of chapter 2, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. But you will see that Daniel's knowledge of God isn't that he is superior to all the gods of Babylon. He's the God in heaven, and he's the God who revealeth secrets. But you will see from verse 19 that when the secret is revealed to Daniel, he blessed the God of heaven. He blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. It wasn't just that Daniel knew God existed or that God was in heaven, but he had an accurate knowledge of the character and the being of God. He is God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. And Daniel knew, however terrible things were for him and the other Hebrew children, however dangerous it was, and remember what has happened, the king has ordered that all the wise men in Babylon be put to death. And it was a time of fear and dread, a time when men would be seeking perhaps to flee to save their lives, knowing that the king's decree would be carried out. But Daniel had the confidence God can change all that. God is able to change the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. And so Daniel had confidence he could go to God, as he did with his three friends. They got down before God, and they knew that that secret, that dream, that Nebuchadnezzar can't remember, and no one in the whole empire of Babylon can tell him what it is, it's with God. He can tell us what it is. And so they went to God, and they prayed, and God revealed it. And this is what Daniel says, verse 22, he revealeth the deep and secret things. He reveals them. Why and how does he do that? Because they're actually with him. In Deuteronomy chapter 29, you have there the words of Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 29. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of his law. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. The secret things, all secret things, Moses doesn't write here that some secret things belong unto God, but all secret things, God's own secrets that are hidden from men, that they can never know unless he reveals them, those secret things belong unto God. And it is humbling for us to remember that even though we have in our hands the divine revelation of God, that God himself maintains secrets. And God is way beyond anything that we are capable of comprehending, even of him. The psalmist said regarding the knowledge that God has of secret things, such knowledge is too high for me. I cannot understand. I cannot understand. That's what the psalmist said. I have much knowledge through experience of God, but there are things with God I can't understand. They are just beyond me. They are away beyond my comprehension. And it is good for us to learn our place before God and to become as little children that we might actually learn of God. Now, Daniel's confidence in God enabled him to trust God and take this matter to God, believing that he could reveal what men could never discover. Now, the secret things, they belong to God, they're with God, he controls them, he can keep them, or he can reveal them. He can hide them, or he can open them out. Daniel knew that. And it is for us important to remember that even our own secrets are known unto God. In the epistle that Paul writes to the Hebrews, you have there in chapter 4, verse 13, these words that are very instructive. Verse 13 of Hebrews 4, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things, doesn't matter what they are, all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. How easily we can forget that. Not a thing we've been involved in this day, not a word we've spoken, not a thought that has passed through our minds. Many things we have kept perhaps to ourselves. But this is what we must ever remember. All things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. So we have to do with him even regarding our own personal secrets. And our secret sins, and our secret thoughts, and our secret attitudes, we have to deal with God regarding them. In the epistle that Paul writes to the Romans, he reminds us there in the chapter 2 and the verse 16 of a day that is to come. Verse 16 of Romans 2, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. Well, what is the apostle reminding us of? That even our secrets that we might be able to hide from men, we shall be judged, and our secrets shall be judged. Whether they were sinful secrets or secrets that should remain secrets, whatever. The hidden things that we would hide from our fellows, we cannot possibly hide from God. And the apostle knew there's a day coming when God shall judge the secrets. The things that no one was able to judge in this world because they were hidden. Because they were covered up. And God is going to make a judgment upon them at last. And again in the Psalm 90 we see the reason for this, how it is. In the Psalm 90, the psalmist tells us that the secrets of men are ever before the Lord. Verse 8 of Psalm 90. Thou hast set our iniquities before thee, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. Our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. When God holds all our secrets in his hand, he has the power, the capability, the wisdom to reveal them at any moment as it would serve his purpose. And this is what Daniel understands. And he trusts God, and he knows whenever Nebuchadnezzar finds impossible to remember, it still remains with God. And God reveals it. And here's what Daniel says, verse 23 then. Verse 22, he revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee. And Daniel then was able to go in before the king, and he was able to tell him what God had revealed, both of the secret, the dream that he couldn't remember, and then give him the interpretation of it. Now, Daniel, in the course of these actions, and as he trusted God, so not only with his lips, but with his life, he testified to the king, and in the midst of all the ungodliness, he testified to the reality of his faith and his trust in God. No one doubted where Daniel stood. No one questioned Daniel's confidence in God. No one questioned Daniel's service to God. And you will see verse 30 of chapter 2 here. Daniel tells the king, but as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thine heart. What does Daniel tell the king? That God has revealed this secret for a reason. He has made known this dream for a reason. For the sakes, their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king. What concerned Daniel was this: the king's decree to slay all the wise men, and that would include Daniel and his three friends. So Daniel takes the matter to God, reveal his secret so that we need not die and that we will not be slain with the other wise men, so-called, of Babylon. And he's telling the king, God has revealed this because of his care for us, his children, even here. God hasn't deserted us in Babylon. God is still here in Babylon. God hasn't forsaken us. Though we're brought here into bondage and captivity, God has come with us, and he's as real to us here in Babylon as ever he was when we were back in Jerusalem. And what is Daniel manifest? His faith by his works. You know what James says? There are those, and they say, I will show thee my faith. And James says, I will show thee my faith by my works. It's my life that declares what I really believe. My faith is no better and no more than my life. You want to know what I believe? Don't listen to me so much as look at me. Look and see the way I behave. Look and see how I live, how I conduct myself. That's the evidence of what I really believe. And here's Daniel, and he's confronted with great difficulties, but there is a spirit of deep humility. There's a meekness and a humility with Daniel that makes him stand out. And you see that he cares for even those who were undeserving, because you see in verse 24 of this chapter 2, Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Now, who were these wise men of Babylon? They were idolaters. They were those who made a pretense of telling the king the future. And the king knew perfectly well that they deceived him. And these men weren't worthy of the offices that they held or the place that the king gave them. And yet, Daniel seemed to care for them. It wasn't just to save his own life. It was even to save the lives of the rest of the wise men in Babylon. What a blessed, charitable, gracious spirit is in Daniel. But you can see that Daniel, when he is honored, there's something beautiful about him. He has asked these three brethren of his to join him and pray to God to reveal the secret. Now, when God does it, and Daniel is elevated to such high office, chapter 2, verse 48, he is made chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. You see, Daniel could have been extremely selfish and self-centered. I am the man who's revealed the secret. I'm the one who's taken this great matter up before God. I am the one whom the king recognizes as having the spirit of the holy gods in him. He recognizes this, and that's why I've been elevated to such high office. And Daniel could well have thought, well, I should be thankful that he hasn't taken my head off. I should be grateful that here in all this ungodliness, God has given me such an honorable position, and I'll be grateful, and I will endeavor to take care of my friends. What does he do? He requested of the king. He made a request for his friends. Give them a position. Give them, please. Honor them. Because they have engaged with me in praying over this matter. That was something that is very obvious in the life of Daniel. Not only was he a man who earnestly prayed himself, and God came in response to his prayers, but Daniel kept company with praying men. And Daniel shows here a personal appreciation for those who prayed for him and prayed with him. He had that appreciation for them. He was not going to overlook it. He wasn't going to forget it. Daniel is seen as a man who appreciates the power and the importance of prayer. And so he had these men set over the affairs, elevated and honored with him. And that is how it ought to be. I recall when the Reverend Hugh Cartwright was minister in Edinburgh. And Edinburgh, of course, was a university city in Scotland. And many of the young people who were in that congregation had come from various parts to study, and they were there in the congregation. And Mr. Cartwright used to regularly have the young people in his months. And he would inquire always as to their progress, how they were getting along. And if they passed an exam or they graduated, he would not only personally congratulate them, but he would encourage all the other young people to do likewise. And he taught them that they were to celebrate one another's success. They were not to be jealous. They were not to be envious. That they were actually to celebrate, as it were, the progress and the advancement of their fellow young people. And that was the spirit that he endeavored to instill into them. It is extremely sad whenever the spirit of envy gets in among Christians in the church. You see again and again the damage that is done when people think more highly of themselves than they ought to think, and they do not appreciate God's blessing on anyone else, or they do not appreciate the progress or even the material success that others have. That ought not to be. And you can see when Daniel was elevated, the problem he had when those who had to acknowledge there was an excellent spirit in Daniel, but they were determined that they would bring him down. And they were determined they would humiliate him, because Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes. As far as they were concerned, Daniel was just too popular in the Empire of Babylon. As far as they were concerned, he was just too popular with the king of Babylon, and they would seek to bring him down. What a terrible spirit that was. How very different to the spirit in Daniel. He appreciated his brethren. Appreciated their prayers. And their success was bound up with his success. And when God honored him, he wanted them to be honored too. That is the spirit that ought to be and every child of God, and as we said at the beginning, these things are written for our learning. The record of the godly lives and the godly behavior of men like Daniel are to be instructive to us, because it in reality is the Spirit of Christ himself. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless his word.